Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
I'm Matt.
I'm Alex. Matt, you were in the shop.
Oh, thanks. Fucking interrupt me, Alex.
And we're the Game Junkies.
Guys, this is a slightly different episode than we usually do. We're not doing a top three list this week, even though it'd been amazing with Kerry's suggestions and made last week something fantastic. Taking a little break from this because we wanted to follow up on something we did last year for a Christmas cracker, actually. One of the most successful ones that I produced, actually. It was all about the DMing and the playing of Dungeons & Dragons that we were doing over on Dungeons & Junkies. And so myself, Alex and Kerry are joined today by two of possibly, and I don't mince my words, two of the finest role players I've ever had the benefit and privilege to play D&D with. So with that being said, they couldn't arrive yet, so we've got Caitlin and Chad instead.
Remember, hey Alex, remember me mentioning I was going to be nice to Tony? That's not happening now. Say bye to your boyfriend.
Of course, me, Alex, and Kerry are joined today by Caitlin from The Mind Games and Chad from View from a Top Rope and other shows which are on Visual Media, of course. Welcome back to Game Junkies, both of you. Not your first time, of course, both of you.
The last time I realized I was actually on Game Junkies and not like Christmas Cracker or anything is when I whooped Alex's ass at Fortnite, so... That's a fond memory.
That's 2 years ago. Well, long overdue. Long overdue, Chad. Long overdue.
Wait, you were the one Alex had the Fortnite match with?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I remember hearing Alex was going to play Fortnite against someone, but he never told me who.
This guy, right here.
Yeah, I was Animal Crossing.
You were Animal Crossing, and of course, you also were on wrap-up of the year last year as well.
Yes,
which was awesome. So you've actually got 2-1 in terms of appearances on Chad.
Yeah, but he runs the network.
He has a lot of juggling to do. To be fair,
hey, also I was only for the first time ever on another of Matt's podcasts very recently. But yeah, I've only ran the network the entire fucking time. So it's just, you know, it's cool. You know, keep don't bite the hand of tea.
I just turn up.
I'd like to point out, Chad, that Graham did the booking on Good Cop Bad Cop, not me. I'm the tan, I just turn up. Right.
I'm just an independent contractor who turns up occasionally.
And phenomenal one at that. Right, so we're all gathered here today to talk about...
talk about our patron saints, the almighty dice.
The clicky-clacky boys.
Yes, yes.
The clicky-clacky math rocks.
Absolutely, the clicky-clacky math rocks. Where we are going to impart... our thoughts on how the last 7 months have gone so far in D&J, and also any advice we have for aspiring DMs or players for that matter, because I was on Techless recently and someone was asking me about D&D in the chat, even though it was about soccer at the time. So advice for people will be appreciated as we go along, of course. So Alex, why don't you kick it off?
Oh, okay. Damn, where do I start?
Introduce yourself and your campaign, I guess?
Yeah.
What's up? I'm Alex, of course. And I run a piratey campaign with pirates that do pirate things that aren't very pirate at the moment because they're too busy fighting cults and running away with a magical staff. Okay, what stood out to me first? Definitely the variety of characters is probably the biggest standout entirely, because we got Reed, who's the short, stuck-up asshole who's completely full of himself, but surprisingly good. He can back himself up most of the time. We got Ran, who is a character I'm absolutely terrified of, who is a lot more layered than they give off. And all round, just really fucking funny to have around. Speaking of funny, and something I'm also very terrified of, next to talk about is Picasso, who just completely flipped the script for what Chad normally plays. Because normally, me and Kerry were talking about this the other day, about your characters, Chad. You've got, what was it? You got Texan Chad, which is Legasso. You've got
Legato Baneswood.
You got Chad Chad, which is, or Assassin Chad, which is Poisonous Chad.
Of course, yes.
We've got the Crazy Animal Lover, Chad.
Crazy Gill Chad.
Unhinged Chad.
Over in Duncan Salazar, yes. Or Vallon, sorry, that's Vallon.
It also goes to the green protests, waving around a sign saying, "You're destroying our planet." And you've also got the completely unhinged magical Chad.
Charlemagne Salazar.
Which is one of my favorites.
Unhinged grandpa.
He's only and then 26. You just got,
and then you got Picasso, which just completely throws off the script to how the others act. Because he's just completely different in every way to every other character. Nothing is taken seriously apart from when Eli died.
I loved that. I loved how Chad was able to. I'm going to inflate his ego. I don't care. How he was able to get in touch with Picasso's. You know, we don't see the dark side of Picasso very often, or the mad side of Picasso. It's always just. Bro, I love that. As exemplified with the Ran Picasso minisode.
And I have to add on, wasn't Picasso meant to have like a different style and a different voice at first? But it changed last minute.
No, so Picasso's initial drawings was initially he had a beak, like a full-on like turtle beak, because some turtles have that. But then I decided I didn't want to have a beak because I was watching Bill and Ted Excellent Adventure. And I was like, you know, I could definitely do a Keanu Reeves kind of character voice for Picasso the whole time. And that's what I redrew his mouth.
And lastly, you have Eli, who, just like Ran, is very complex, many layers that you wouldn't think of at first. And has been through some really horrible shit now that I look at it. Because I sent them a shit post the other day about a line. I was thought, this is really nasty of me, but it's so accurate at the same time. And plus, they are
a bride stealer.
We have a and a bride
stealer. Hey, you left your wife first. Not my fault. She prefers women.
That's a fair point.
And a love. And being a warlock and dying allows me to add an interesting bit of plot, which I'm sure might come up at some point.
Stares into the abyss.
Yeah, at time of recording, that hasn't happened, of course.
So. Yeah, at the time of recording, we literally start in chapter two this Tuesday coming.
Yeah.
So that'll be an exciting way to play it off. But yeah, apart from the characters, which really do make it, it's basically just D&D, but in a water world that's main theme is pirates and at war against the Navy. And there's lots of other magical aspects on it. Because, fun fact, because I know Matt doesn't like doing science in his world. He just does magic. I was working out the science in my world because of the size of the planet and the speed it would have to spin at to do a full orbit in 12 months around its own sun, if it didn't have a magical balance, the average wave would be about 4,000 foot tall.
You sound
a tsunami
Satan.
Planet.
Basically. So it needs a magical like balancer. Otherwise no one would live there.
You say I don't do science. In Edenoy, Alex.
I mean, you literally said at one point in the chat that Edenoy doesn't, or was it D&D doesn't have magic? D&D doesn't have science.
D&D doesn't focus on science. And that's
you mentioned an Edenoid doesn't have science, just magic.
Edenoid doesn't have scientific advances.
That's one way to put it, I guess.
To be fair, it would be what you would call an old school scenario. But we'll get to my campaign in a minute. Can
yeah, I've definitely talked enough about pirates. Whatever there is next, you'll have to listen to chapter one. And obviously, if you listen to chapter one, we'll be able to move on to chapter two soon. So Indeed. Let's move on to someone else's campaign.
Indeed. Of course, all of Alex's first chapter is available now on Video Media. Let's go with Caitlin next.
I knew that was coming. The order is always predictable. Oh, my campaign is... It's the odd step-sibling when compared to this, because... You've got Murder Hobo Land featuring nice people for some goddamn reason. Need to stop giving Kerry nice people. We need to murder Hobo more. We've got Matt, just Matt. No.
It's about as traditional as D&D gets, really.
Yeah. I would describe your campaign as...
Nothing wrong with traditional.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice change.
It's classic. Keeps us grounded.
Yeah, to be fair, it was, you know, it was route one for me at the time. Not to say that I won't try something a bit more different in the future, of course. It may end at one point.
DMing changes over time. That's why you've got the cape and between people. That's why we've got Pirate Man over here making my child suffer more than they've already suffered. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the literal psychopath. That is Chad.
What? It's
you.
You literally created Inception level the world building.
Yeah, you really did. I mean, Mithril existed before. It wasn't a Chad thing. It's been in D&D for a while, but
nah, it's from like second edition.
Yeah. And then you have me, who went, you know what? Let's take all of this, throw it in the bin. And psychologically torment my place. My campaign is... I'd argue it's probably the more complicated of... Because Ulfarm is... Like, there's more detail to Ulfarm the longer you stare at it, and you're like, oh god, it goes all the way to the top, man. But my one tends... I've chosen to focus more on the people and kind of the site impact. So like Into the Waste, it's called. It's not on Visionaries Global Media because I'm my own entity for some goddamn reason. But it means I have my own publishing thing. It's over on Mind Games. Go look it up. I'll release the 8th episode eventually when I find my diversion. But no, I think the highlight of my campaign was that episode 5 that I was terrified for. 4 and 5 I think were like, you guys made the fight in the Institute. Like, that was really well done with all of you. But 4 and 5, I had the most fun with, just because it was... A lot of it was focused on making you as players feel uneasy, rather than just your characters. And you can kind of tell, actually, if you listen back to the recording, there are bits where each of you sound a little bit thrown off from kind of your normal confidence. Even Chad at one point, it was a bit like, the bit when you knew it was Scarlet was like, I hate you.
I was trying to figure out at that point, my bit of uneasiness definitely came from, I was like, am I gonna have to reveal that I'm actually a changeling right now? Or am I gonna get to hold up this charade for a bit while longer?
Yeah. And I think, like, we make fun of Shambles, but Shambles kind of brings a bit of lightness to
the dark.
The dark that is the party, because you've got Dakota, who has grown up in a shit environment and has somehow come out as kind of a naive teen with, you know, a demonic sugar daddy.
Lots of fire.
Yeah, you've gone full Tinker. It's concerning. You've got San, who is genuinely a good man, just dealt a shit hand. and who just wants to protect his family, and somehow you lot have become part of that family. But he is angry boy. I love San. San's my favorite, and none of you can ever stop that, so suck it.
San's my favorite, and I play shambles.
San's the best.
San is amazing.
San is very good.
Yes, Kerry, deal with it. I love San.
I've got to admit, I want to ask a serious question at this point. How frustrated are you every time Shamble pulls out the crowbar at this point?
No, I think Shamble's crowbar has kind of become a meme by this point.
It has.
I honestly expect it more.
To be fair, it all came about purely because Shamble was trying to find a way of not using his magic, basically, to kill something. And a crowbar is the only thing on him which was a blunt instrument.
I want to point out that the crowbar joke kind of originated in the Mindscape thing, where you had like a floating door that didn't have like a physical form on the other side, and you went, I want to open it with a crowbar.
Also tried to go hunting with a crowbar.
That was
my dad's mouth, your crowbar.
I even used it in Chris's one shot. I used a lot of stuff in Chris's one shot that Caitlin was unaware of.
Yes, Shambles doesn't have wings. Don't let him say otherwise.
No. To be fair, and I left that in for good reason when I was editing that for Chris as well. The Thunderstep was kind of fun to use, though.
Thunderstep was very cool.
Yeah.
And no, my campaign is different.
I'm not entirely sure Alex was grateful for me using it on him, but...
Thankfully, you had the sorcery points to spare, so you didn't murder everyone with it, which I was concerned about.
Shambles has learned to use sorcery points, yes.
No, I think you guys, the best moment for all of you, like from a DM perspective of watching you, was Charlemagne's reveal.
Because
You all took that as very, like your reactions were all very in character. Like San just took it in stride and was like, you know what? I judge you by your actions, not by whether you have weird eyes. Dakota was a bit shaken, but still trusted entirely. And Shambles made it clear that he cares more about kind of what's within people, despite him being a giant goof.
This is the ironic thing about a lot of my characters. They're not intentionally meant to be comic relief.
Yeah.
Shambles wasn't originally meant to be comic relief.
You called him Shambles.
When I create my character, I literally create their name last. It wasn't until I finished, I heard about some of the characters, because Alex is very forthcoming with his character development when it's not his campaign stuff, obviously. And I was like, okay, so you've got a serious character. I need to have something to counterbalance that. Hence Shambles. That worked quite well.
Burn down an orphanage.
Shambles did not burn down the orphanage, and you actually have backstory for that to prove it, Caitlin.
I do, which you'll come into force with later on.
I intend to. Look forward to it, in fact.
I have to say, my favorite thing about the Charlemagne reveal actually wasn't the actual reveal. My favorite time of it, and it was something that wasn't even really said. It wasn't something that was said at all. It was way back when we were in the tunnels, and I told them all to leave the room, and I talked to the statue, but I said, I turned to my real self, and then like none of them like clocked it completely until at the very end when I said, all right, I turned back into Varys the Great. And then just all of their expressions of realizing, like they were all like, wait, what'd you say, Chad? And then we just didn't touch on it. We just moved on completely from it.
You heard a voice, you assumed it was Clive, the statue.
Not even sorry about that, Caitlin. I named the statue.
I hate you. Let's talk about someone else's campaign before I bash your brains in with a crowbar.
Okay. Right. As I'm pretty sure that you and Chad are the two longest serving DMs in the group. Do you have any like advice that you would give? What's the further advice you'd give to aspiring DMs? Besides, don't do it.
Let me see. What would be the best? Honestly, sounds counterintuitive. You can plan this. Like, when you plan a session, feel free to put as much detail into story and things as you want. But don't plan exactly where they're going to go down to the detail, because they will never follow it. Players don't do what you think they're going to do, even when it's really bloody obvious where they should be going, which I felt Chad's pain in Club Pathos. Improvise. Everything's improv. Half my plot scenes have been improv.
It's good advice, to be fair. Very good advice, actually.
I mean, I come from a drama background, so it helps in that bit. But you honestly, just making it up on the fly, you'd be surprised how much, like, how more natural it feels than going down a set path.
I think that's probably quite good advice. Chad, what about you and your campaign of crazy fucking psychotics?
Well, with that wonderful introduction, yes, I am once again Chad, and I guess I am definitely the longest serving DM, not continuously, but I did DM. I used to DM when I was in middle school and then into my early high school days. So that was back in like 2001, 2002. So
I was three.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little bit older. All right.
Everyone's older than me, okay?
But then, yeah, I took a break for a long time from DMing. I always kept my ear to the ground. I've always been interested in like DM or Dungeons and Dragons like podcasts, but there really wasn't a lot out there until Critical Role kind of came back around. Then Dimension 20 kicked in. And then you have all these other great ones that have popped up since. And so that's really what brought me back in, clearly Oxventure and everything like that. But then I met up with, you know, Matt. You guys started doing this during the pandemic. And I was like, oh, hell yeah, I want to come back, do this again. And that led to the creation of Wolfhom. And Matt, I do have to give it to you for why Wolfhom was created the way it was. Because your traditional Dungeons & Dragons campaign, I am the perfect subjugate for the Bender meme, where I'm going to go create my own campaign with blackjack and hookers, because Wolfhom is about throwing everything at the fucking wall and then picking out the pieces that you like the most.
Wow. Okay. So I'm the one responsible indirectly for everyone going through hell every fifth Tuesday. Okay. Very good.
It's purgatory. Okay. It's not hell.
One would argue poetry's worse than hell.
You know, one could argue that, but, you know, one could probably be wrong. Unless we're going, yes, you know, Dante's Levels of Inferno is here. But yes, Wolfhom is my wonderful creation. Also, Helljavik, which is the actual world that you all started in, which is the vastly technological superior world with airships and a whole palace democracy and all that kind of fun stuff that I actually do have all written out as well that someday we will get to. But then Wolfhom is where you all dive deep after dying and were sent to. And this is the purgatory dimension. This is Vegas for every dimension out there. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, what do you want me to say about Wolfhom? It's hard to really go anywhere.
Well, first of all, what about the characters, for example? What have you liked about them, for example?
Oh, all of the characters. I won't lie, one of my favorite things was I loved LB. LB, just his ability to cast magic, but then also have no common sense at all to deal with any situation. That what, like, when LB was trapped in the glass room that all I said was magic proof, and he just kept shooting magic at it until I finally said, hey, you know you got a hammer in your hand, right? It hurt. It hurt, like, to the point of, like, that's, as a DM, like, I guess that's one of my biggest pieces of advice, is everyone goes off on these tangents about being so pissed about railroading and everything like that. You don't ever really need to worry about railroading. Just let your players do what they want, but there will be points where you have to railroad your player into at least helping themselves out. And it's not about your story. It's about saving themselves from themselves. Like, it's, and it's a hard concept to really, because you feel bad at first about it, because you're like, oh fuck, I can't tell a player what they should be doing here. But then if you really, really think about it, you're not telling them what to do. You're just showing them the other side of the coin that they are clearly not fucking looking at that moment.
Me, when Shambles was like, I can put the guards to sleep. And I'm like, do not put the guards to sleep.
Part of that because I actually am stupid as hell in real life, but it's natural extensions of my own being. I've got to admit that I did feel, as myself and also as LB, very frustrated when Alex was just saying, we'll just press any. I'm like, no, God. The cube was amazing. He was genius, and Alex I'm guessing Kevin's doing the same thing as me, drawing a map as you're going through, make sure which door you're going through. So like, oh, we'll go this one. I'm like, no, you fucking idiots.
Ah, yes, the classic cube. And that, this is, all right, hold on. I guess mine's going to be a lot of advice, because I do have a lot of things that I think can help people out for creating things. For creating, like, stories and characters and all that, like, for your world, steal everything. Steal everything and just change it a little bit. You want to know why? Because 95% of, like, people out there who create are going to be happy that you are taking something that they loved and trying to integrate it into something that you love. That's what artists are like. Like, I don't know how we got so fucking up our own asses that everyone is Metallica and is going to sue your ass off and the overlord Disney, all right? That's not how most people are, okay? Most people want their art and their things shared. And, like, I have so many anime references in my campaign with names and, like, small characters that, you know what? Probably go over the heads of 80% of people. But you know those 20% of people that catch those tiny little Trigun or Cowboy Bebop references that I'm throwing in and they just get a smile from it? That's what it's all about. So fucking steal everything, because the cube is based on one of my favorite horror movies of all time, which is just called Cube, obviously. It's a wonderful independent horror movie where they have to solve math puzzles to go through all these different rooms and every room is trapped. So I took that and I turned it into an infinitely repeating room with magical doors, and then filled it with all kinds of fun stuff.
It was genius. It was so simple. That's effective.
Yeah, that planning stage is like literally one piece of paper for a, 14 room dungeon with 7 battles, a whole bunch of things. Like, that's the kind of thing where, like, simple is sometimes better. Keep it simple, stupid. The classic KISS rule. Keep it simple, stupid. Because it's much easier for Wolfam, and I guess the best way that I can describe how I built Wolfam and why I love all my players, which I'll go back to in 1 second, because I do want to talk about the other players in the campaign, is Wolfam is a world that is a living, breathing world in my head. And everything's always moving in it. And I have just dropped you into said world. And then I just get to see what the fuck you do. Like, I have story beats and everything like that. And I, you know, put the carrot on the stick in front of you. But I always say, well, what the fuck do you want to do now? Like, I, at any point, will let you explore any part of Wolfam and go talk to these people. I have all these things figured out and written down. It's about the world to me and the story that we can tell then together. Because I think and Caitlin's right. Caitlin's campaign is very micro in that way that it's on the individual, each character's psychological, personal journey to everything like that. Wolfam is more of the macro, where you are a part of this world. Your story is a part of a much larger, like, ongoing narrative. And
Yeah, at times we're definitely going to focus in, as in when we went with Virion down on Isla Diablo, and I brought Terran from the backstory, which is one of my favorite moments ever, because that was one of my favorite carrot on the stick moments, is I kept telling Carrie, I was like, you keep hearing things and you recognize a voice. And that was one of my favorites, is when we started in the forest, and I kept every like 3 to 5 minutes ago, can you just make a quick perception check? And it's just that noise in the back of your head. And I just insert the little earworm in, and then I let your guys' imagination run with it. Because I, like, the reveal of Terran was cool and everything, but I guarantee the shit that Carrie had built up in her head building up to that made that reveal 1,000 times better. Because
for sure,
I let that imagination just run. I went, ooh, you know something's up. There's something from your life that is important. And so with the macro campaign like that, I think it's in some ways easier just to plug in a couple of little backstory pieces here and there. And I am a psychopath. I don't know. I've rambled for like, listen to me. This is why I'm a DM. Because I can just talk straight without taking a breath for at least 10 minutes. And I just don't really know why. I have this just innate ability to ramble on. Maybe it's because I love the sound of my own voice.
Yeah, I'll relate to that one.
I would say if you're going to start DMing for the first time, probably go, maybe not as in-depth as Insane Psychopath over here, but definitely go for a more macro approach. Because, like, you have no idea how many intersecting people and lines and crossovers there are in my campaign planning that y'all haven't touched. Like, I think you've scraped, like, 2% with all we've gone into with you guys, and
That's equal parts amazing and terrifying. Might have gotten you a psychopath by the time.
Make a world campaign you're proud of, and then you can fit the players in and their characters in, and you can work with the people to like see how they gel with this, how they'd react, whether they'd spend their entire time antagonizing a dragonborn. You know, normal things.
Whether your character just tries to piss off everybody who is clearly more powerful than them at every given second.
Like Damien.
If they're going to be dicks, they're going to be a dick back to them.
Damien may be one of the most amazing creations I've ever seen in any D&D campaign.
He's finally not one-dimensional as well. He just didn't like y'all enough to give him a second dimension.
That's fair. Very fun.
I think Damien is one of my favorites because I know that Caitlin and I can just yell at each other for at least a good 20 minutes of the session every time that I am the DM, regardless of what character I throw at Damien, because Damien's going to be angry about it no matter what. I mean, besides Happy, like most characters have been mostly nice to Damien until Damien like swears at them. And then their characters also, if you're a dick to them, they're like, nah, fuck you. And being able to torture Damien in multiple ways has been a lot of fun.
I will remember.
I've pontificated enough now, Matt. Do you want me to keep talking or can someone else talk for a fucking minute?
Let's talk about Kerry's campaign. I want Murder Hobo, damn it.
Do you want me to go?
Up to you. You pick.
I normally go last.
So you go now. Go.
Me? Okay. Okay.
Yes, we finished with Kerry's. The best. Ha.
Okay. Okay. Maybe stop. Okay. Well, yes. I'm Matt, and I am running the, as Alex called it, the OG campaign of Edenoi. Not gonna lie. If Hasbro wanted to, they could probably sue me for a lot of money if they wanted to. The amount of stuff I've stolen from them for my campaigns. I've had such good fun. At the time of recording, I've completed 2 full seasons, which means I've got a lot to look back on. I've learned a lot. I also have a lot to actually be angry at myself for. One thing I learned, and this would be a good bit of advice for budding DMs, is try to make sure that you spread out. If you've got a good sized party, try not to break your party I've seen some people have like parties of like 15, 16 people. I'm like, that's not going to work. How are you meant to like spread out this? I mean, the size we've got is just perfect. You've got enough to like make everything spread out equally. I haven't been entirely spreading things equally. We've barely touched on Corsoon's backstory, for example, in Edenoi, which is kind of fun in a way. That becoming season three. I've got a lot more to explore with Alelis in season three as well. Reigns, are you getting more added to it by Alex? So that's always
I was trying to work. That's kind of my fault because I didn't really write a proper backstory back in the day, did I?
Yeah, we keep adding more to it. Tinker's got demons to face, and that's always good. And demons, well, Tinker is a demon, basically, but the special magic team. I also have my campaign is the only time we've ever missed a week as well in D&D since we started because I was down with COVID. Obviously, it's the only reason we've ever missed a week for one reason or another. So something what Caitlin said about advice for DMing. Trying to rail with people is not a great idea at times. I personally dislike it. But as long as you know your starting point of the episode and where you want to end up, everything else in the middle can kind of write itself, because at the end of the day, you're the one as a DM paint literally the canvas, and you're just basically painting the scene. The players are the people on the stage acting it out. And the amazing thing is that I'm blessed with amazing players in the Edenoi campaign. I mean, Rain, Alili, Tinker, and Corsoon are probably four of the I couldn't ask for better characters. And season two, which won't be up by the time this, the finale of which isn't going to be up by the time this comes out, but you guys have been through a bit of a running battle this year. I'm looking forward to seeing what you've got in season three. Did you think that I was going to end up bringing all of your past contacts in, Mick, or not?
I guess I knew they would come up eventually. I didn't expect that I would get all of them and one foul swoop. Get it? Foul.
I hate you.
God, I'm clever.
What? And I am quite proud of the body swap episode. That was extremely good fun, especially how much you guys lent into it. All of you did that so, so well. And then that was going on at the same time as Alili doing some of the best character work as a paladin. Angrily passing the water on the water chain and getting mad at a dragon tail soup. And that was just so beautiful.
Hey, Matt, what's with you and making every magical creature into some kind of food dish? Huh?
I'm a chef.
What's with you and endangering all of Rain's family?
The necromancer raises them all and we go to war.
it could well happen. Is there any other advice I would give the DM? One big bit of advice I would give is that I've looked through some of the things like well setting up Edenoi. I'm like, because the rule book is vast, and every single book you get is a lot of money if you keep adding it all up. Chad, how many books do you have now?
A lot.
You spent upwards of $10 on those books, haven't you?
Yeah, upwards of $10. Yeah.
Exactly. It's not a cheap pastime, Dungeons and Dragons, for sure. fake, and the, but you've all the like Unearthed Arcana, and you get all the extra bonus books. So when you are coming to be a DM, yes, you've got some homework to do, but at the same time, if something doesn't work for your campaign, you haven't got to put it in. For example, I don't put the weight limit in my campaign because it doesn't add anything to it for me. You guys as players will know if whether or not that would be too heavy for you to carry, for example. It's just some rules just don't work. But I often get, maybe Max and Chad, can I do this? Can I, if I do this, can I roll with advantage? I'm like, yeah, go on then. I'm a very generous DM, as proven by the inspiration I hand out so much that Kerry has 5 stacks at this point. So I let you roll it over as well, don't I? Because I'm very generous like that. But maybe season 3 we will start with 0 on inspiration.
I give you like 3 episodes, Matt, tops, before you give out inspiration to someone.
To be fair, if I may give out in the first episode, I'm going to be a lot more demanding in season 3. I'm going to be the training wheels are off, as it were. I'm being inspired.
That's kind of the difference, is like you have inspiration that rolls over. I'll give it out in session, and you can only use it in session.
Mm. See, I rolled it over at the moment, but at the same time, it is now the training wheels are off. We've been through a lot as a team, and I'm like, yeah, it's time for permanent consequences. For sure, in Edenoid. In fact, I have told Alex what the consequences would have been if something had happened, but I can't reveal on the show. I have to tell you after the show is finished. is there anything that you guys have all particularly liked about Edenoid, or not liked for that matter? So I can improve.
Oh, I hated the whole thing. I will say the body swap episode was a lot of fun. That was probably my favorite time of Edenoid.
I did actually like the fact that I was able to carry it going a bit after you actually finished it, because Alex, through no prompting, and I can say it because it's out on the network, decided to go to the bar and then was accosted by Cassandra, who thought it was still cool soon. So that was fantastic. I loved it. And again, you guys lent into it beautifully.
Yeah, I think my favorite copy of the character swap, to be honest, because it was really clever. And the fact that I called it before you even announced it.
You did, but at the same time, you seem to do that a lot with my notes, Alex.
I know you do well, Matt.
That's a good thing, but, you know, sometimes I will be unpredictable. You never know. The sandcastle, for example. Caitlin, what stood out to you from Edenoid? Anything in particular?
I think, honestly, the thing that's stuck with me in Edenoid is, like Chad said earlier, Chad and I could yell at each other for 20 minutes in character. That's just kind of how we are when it comes to roleplay. But I think genuinely watching kind of the difference in Tinker and Corsoon when they met and Tinker and Corsoon now, like especially with the finale and that.
Spoilers.
They've come a long way.
But in fair, the finale of season 1, you could always tell the difference from when.
Finale of season 1, even the one from Tinker's Village, the Antakin one. Like the interactions in there, apart from, you know, the alcoholic tendencies, it's really interesting to see, especially since, you know, half the time our characters don't get on. Looks at Picasso, looks into camera. He grows on you, but also, I swear to God. We'll keel haul him.
That was quite a moment, actually, to be fair. Just to get back to Ace campaign, where Eli did say bro for the first time.
I wish we had, like, if we end up doing clips, I want a zoom in on Matt's face during that.
That's the only problem with our rotation, is I had to hold on to... Me and Caitlin knew about that for months. It just sucked knowing it for that long.
Yep.
We need to go back to twice a week. Matt.
Stop having a job. God.
Inconsiderate.
Yeah.
Do less podcasts.
Kerry, anything from Eden that stood out to you in particular? What have you enjoyed?
You're asking me to pick just one thing?
Off the top of your head, one thing. You can pick, multiple things you want to.
Can I cheat and pick everything by just saying the entire vibe the campaign has and how it kind of contrasts all the others?
Of course you can. Works for me. I like
definitely
that.
Most lighthearted compared to...
I think Caitlin and I were talking about this once.
What, how we're both evil?
We're edgy. Eden is lighthearted.
It's I do welcome all those lovely comments. I've got a funny feeling that I'm going to dash your dreams like in season three, what I'm writing at the moment, but you never know. It may still be quite wholesome. I guess that means then we head to, quote, Modo Hobo Island for the last bit. Kerry.
Okay. Hi, I'm Kerry. I run the campaign. It doesn't actually have a name. Because when I was writing up the plans, I didn't actually give it one. But everybody gets to be stuck on the delightful Oshia Island.
I realise that sounds like, oh shit, which is how anyone would feel on the island.
Is that, I originally wanted to call it Oceana, but then I was like, that's a real thing, isn't it?
Technically, yeah.
I'm actually the newest DM, arguably, of the group, since Alex and I were the last ones to start DMing, but Alex went before me, so.
What are you mad about?
All the animal spotting.
Oh, God!
Casting lightning on water. All our favourite things to do.
I'm probably going to say the most standout thing for my campaign is the characters. We have Moira, the 40-foot tall punching bag.
Moira is not 40 foot tall.
He's going to get there with her heels.
She's 43.8.
As of the recording of this, the last episode I released can pretty much be summed up with Moira going, "Hi, everyone," and everyone going, "Shut the fuck up, Moira, or we're going to beat you to death. Don't talk to us."
I love the fact that I actually mentioned that Moira isn't wearing her heels, but in her backpack to be used as shurikens later if need be.
When I was editing the last episode that's been released of this, I was just crying with laughter at Oberyn jumping at Moira for no discernible reason other than because she exists.
I decided Oberyn was going to be grouchy because he had been alone for the past, 6 weeks, which I thought was 6 months, P.S. And so he had lost all social skills again.
You were best friends with a cat.
Yeah. Is there a problem with that?
No problem with that. No problem with that at all. But I have not seen the cat that Marmalade is based on, and it's fucking terrifying.
Marmalade is based on a cat for one of my clients. The cat is called Rupert. He has vampire teeth and he is huge. And he is really cute.
He is really cute, but he's terrifying because of the vampire fangs. We're going to fight that one now, aren't we?
Unlike the bird that we've called Damien Jr.
So we have Moira, the 40-foot-tall punching bag. We have Charlie, the literal ginger ninja. Makes every combat, like balancing for every piece of combat, an absolute fucking nightmare.
Not least because of their unbelievable initiative modifier.
Yeah, it gets better because the other day, Alex comes to me and says, "I have an idea." I said, "Oh no."
This is never a good thing.
But then when he explained it, I went, okay, but not yet.
Yeah.
It is cool, though.
And then he sulks.
Charlie loses their arms.
And then Alex sulks for half an hour to get his own way.
We have Oberyn, who, whilst I haven't been able to do much of it so far, is fun to terrorize. And it's fun watching Oberyn talk to every single animal you walk past.
You have a menagerie.
It's an army. Okay.
An army, get it right.
Half of them are dead in the tunnel at this point, it's fine.
And we have
everyone I love.
Oh, God! Everyone cute.
And we have Shard, who Caitlin has decided is going to live in space when all this is over. Away from all of you lot.
Bullshit. Go to space.
It's been decided. If you get to the big bad end guy, you deal the final blow, you'll turn around and Shard will just be floating up into the atmosphere.
Back their helio balloon and whoop, up, up and away.
I've got to admit about your campaign, Kerry. It's been very fun to, because I've never played a female character in D&D before, but it was extremely liberating and fun, actually. I enjoyed it massively. It was a great opportunity to actually branch out a bit from it, for me.
I really like what you've done with, you've changed combat quite a bit.
Yes.
Compared to how most of us run D&D.
How so?
The fight with the creature in the cave where the ocean kept coming in.
Yeah. And dynamic terrain.
Dynamic terrain. Bear. You had a little avalanche.
The abomination, as you call it, that was brilliant. With the dynamic terrain is something I wasn't prepared for. I was like prepared for so many things. That was not one of them.
And then you got the jesters, which I'm surprised wasn't at the top of the list, where they had every jesters. Single resistance in the game split between them. So there was no way to really track which one had which resistance.
Genius. Absolute genius. It really was.
Well, I mean, it was simple enough. I took the list of magical resistances because I figured putting in bludgeoning, slashing, and piercing would be a bit of an overkill. Just split it down the middle and kind of assigned it randomly between them.
It's simple, but so effective. And yeah, that's brilliant. I'm actually really jealous of that.
I guess because I'm trying to homebrew everything, I'm just trying to think of things to liven it up a little bit, for lack of better terms.
Well, you've done a very good job of livening it up.
I'm determined to homebrew the whole thing, basically.
You fired a fucking tsunami at us.
You did. And we just sat there and watched.
Well, some of us sat there and watched logically because we knew that it was far too large for us to do anything about.
Someone tried to use, shape water.
Tried to mess with 40 gallons of water and a mountain was tried to be taken down by an ant.
Does anything that can stop a tsunami? It's a cantrip.
Anything that could stop tsunami is Moira.
At least Moira wanted to try and help.
We should have pushed you to.
Shard was too busy watching their life fall apart again.
It would have been like a scene from 20. Sorry, it would have been a scene from 2012 where someone was just standing there watching the tsunami. Only Moira would get there. Cassidy is like, "Oh shit, that's not going to work," and then gets hit by the tsunami.
Honestly, I think the best thing about my campaign is the roleplay that the four of you provide. Just listening back to it. It's like, this is some top tier stuff. I'm glad I get to listen to it.
This is some quality bullying of Moira.
It wasn't even all bullying of Moira. I mean, listening to Oberyn and try and verbally rip Moira's throat out is fun.
I've got to admit, I do like... I thought I like it in a way. I don't try to get on someone's skin so much. I don't try to get on her skin when I'm in character, but sometimes it just seems to sort of work in terms of the dynamic. I kind of like it. I particularly like the fact that Charlie doesn't get on with Moira at all.
That is your own fault.
But at the same But at the same time, a lot can be said about Alex's characters in general don't get along with any character of mine.
I'm trying to think of any of our characters get along.
That's your choice, not mine.
Charlie and Moira
don't. I'd say
they probably would, just Dakota is very snippy.
She set Shambles on fire.
I mean, that was your fault.
Dragon.
Was it?
I think so. I'm trying to remember back when that was. I'm
trying to remember why I set Shambles on fire.
I mean, I've cast an Eldritch Blast on you a couple of times.
That'd be it.
You played with my toy train in court. For
you gave it to Shambles.
Yeah, so it's an act of kindness because I gave it my toy train to play with.
Because Shambles wasn't allowed to be the fucking lawyer.
I would say my favorite thing about Carrie's campaign is definitely interacting with Marmalade. Every interaction I have with Kat is my favorite part of it. And then every time anyone else tries to tell me to tell the cat what to do and I get to go on a tirade about the cat does what it wants, I can suggest Marmalade does that, but I cannot promise anything.
I love the fact that you kept putting fish out your pants.
Never. That's how it gets under my skin. Just with these illogical comments that I can't handle. I have a pack.
I know.
Where the fish are. Stop saying I pulled them out of my pants. Phrasing.
Shard contemplates where they went wrong.
It is, to be fair, Oberyn and Marmalade are a double act I didn't know I needed in my life. I also had to put a lot of credit on Kerry for being patient, whereas the other gym would say, like, not another fucking animal voice. Because I would have been like that. I've been like, what does a hawk sound like?
I mean, really, the only one I've actually, only ones I've actually voiced are Marmalade and the Winter Bear, which you fought. I said Chester Cheeto's voice was too high to really be heard, but he salutes, so.
Ah, that's fair. I really did like the bear, though. I liked the bear.
You know, before we murdered it.
Well, yes.
Well, almost murdered it.
Almost. Mer escaped in the end.
Mer left.
I did like
Mer the fact left that the chat.
Speaking of bears, I like the fact of when Oberyn turned up wearing a bear pelt. Like, did you talk to the bear before you killed it? Moira literally dripping with sarcasm. It's the only time Moira was ever sarcastic towards Oberyn, but it was perfectly timed.
Yeah, when Oberyn bought out, if you don't shut up, I'm going to fucking chin you. I'm pretty sure Oberyn indirectly called Moira a piece of shit at some point in that run.
Very classily, though.
Oh, of course.
See, Mama, this is why we moved to the island.
I love the fact that Shard has an open invitation to the island and the rest of you don't know it exists.
It's true. Oh, dear. Hey, what's your favourite part about Murder Harbor Island?
As brought up earlier, definitely the combat, because no two bits of combat we've had have been the same. Like, as you said earlier, the tsunami mechanic and like the jesters having split resistances and Murr being on the ice before being chased by an avalanche. Everything has stood out and had its own uniqueness to it. Nothing's ever been predictable about the combat.
Mm.
And that's probably one of my favourite parts.
You have done a fine job, Rick Curry. I also want to give a shout out for the patience you have with Moira using Tiny Hut to save the day and then starting a fire inside it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be honest, and I can bring my note. It's up now because the episode is up and it is out. When it came to that bit, that's a bit of Moira. I wrote the getting away from the avalanche, but all of that is for Moira's tiny hut. I predicted it was going to happen because you were so excited about using it. So I thought,
I was
a tiny bit about escaping from the avalanche, just write lots about Moira's doing tiny hut.
Oh.
But it was fun. It was creative. Everyone stared in shock as Moira suggested something semi-sensible.
And then proceeded to undermine that immediately afterwards.
Like trying to burn away the oxygen in the enclosed space.
Because it only lasts for 8 hours anyway.
I love the avalanche bit, so it was literally just Shard going, this is not what you do in an avalanche, idiots, get back here.
Everyone, Elamir, bye. Shard, what are you doing?
Get back here. It's like daycare.
Brilliant. There is a bit where Shard's like, why do I get stuck with a babysitting?
Why do I have to look after these children?
Because it's your Tuesday.
There's only one child I look after, and he's dead.
I say, there seems to be a running dynamic in all the campaigns.
Babysitting.
Caitlin and Chad babysitting are the rest of us.
Hey, Picasso babysits no one.
That's the one exception.
As I said earlier, Chad is not the complete opposite of Chad, but Picasso is the complete opposite of Chad's characters.
I love the fact that Reed is blissfully unaware that mutiny is going to happen at some point.
I have a feeling Picasso's not going to leave Eli alone for a while, just in case.
Well, I say this most of the time, that one day I'm literally just going to have to ditch all my plans and run a combat session of mutiny. And I can't wait.
Gonna go in my favor.
Yeah, there's no way Reed's beating a lion in a fight of magic. Come on, fucking war.
And I mean, you
now.
Haven't actually paid your crew. You paid your crew once, but you didn't actually pay any of the main members.
I pay the crew.
Yeah, Eli's in charge of paying the crew.
And sailing the ship, managing the crew, and everything else apart from the boat.
You just read the meme you sent.
Yeah.
Just get the meme off.
This is it. You know when the ship got stuck in the canal and there was the tiny digger trying to dig out the ship and that got turned into a meme?
Yeah.
I sent Caitlin a meme the other day. Eli's the digger. There are problems on the ship.
The problems on the ship are lack of family, the staff, the pact, the cult, Reed being a bastard, Picasso's endless broness. Ran scritches. Dad being back, mum possibly not dead, not being paid, sailing the ship, running the ship's combat, literally everything. And ran scritches are on there because ran scritches are important, damn it. Ran deserves to feel loved.
The camaraderie between Ran and Picasso in your campaign, Alex, is unbelievably wholesome.
Yeah, and if you haven't watched episode 12 yet, where it was just Ran and Picasso, why the fuck are you listening to this? Go watch that first.
It is amazing. I think I can quote Picasso word for word. This is the best day ever, Fermi bro.
You need to ditch this. You need to ditch this episode like for a period French.
Something that does not translate massively to the UK, but no. It works great in America.
I was like, that doesn't apply in British school.
Well, it didn't when I was at school anyway.
Yeah, it did when I was.
Did want to ask real quick because I rambled so much during my section. And everyone else got to ask, what were your favorite parts of my campaign? So I can bask in some happiness for a fucking second.
Oh yeah,
so,
I didn't ask either.
Yeah, see we all want some happiness.
Matt did it.
We all get to do it.
Absolutely.
You there's three campaigns left then to talk about.
Absolutely. You get to do that. Absolutely. I don't want to go first.
I'll ask Carrie to go first.
I mean, not gonna lie, it's my favorite one to be a player in, partially because it has my favorite, like, sparkly son.
Best boy.
Best boy. Just, I mean, obviously I loved the Taran fight. I loved Alex's character, Cal. Cries. And just, everything keeps you on your toes. It's like really hard to try and second guess anything. Or maybe it's just because I'm as thick as two short planks, but...
Because Chad's crazy.
Yeah, Chad is crazy.
Can't second guess what he's doing.
He's got law books on top of law books.
Oh, and to the way, if you throw any random idea at Chad, the answer is pretty much always yes.
I can. I want this.
Yes.
No, actually, he said no to me once. Actually,
he said no to you a couple times, Matt.
Alex just says what kind of request Matt makes.
I've had to say no to Alex at times, as if Alex's list looks like the kid for the Santa Claus, who's like, I need everything in the world. That's the list I get from anything. Alex, like every like couple
it was,
times.
Can I have every? It was like, it wasn't ID. It was like, can I have this, please? But there's just a lot on there. But I got like 90% of it.
I'm a giving Santa Claus sometimes.
What would I pick? I loved the fact that you literally dropped the world from under us, literally, because we fell into a new world entirely, which I definitely didn't see coming, and I imagine most of us didn't see coming.
I did.
I mean, you see everything coming, to be fair. definitely, I know I said this for Kerry's campaign, so it seems a bit cheaper now again, but the combat, because I quite enjoy combat. The mix of what we've had has just been brilliant. Like the Taran fight lasted like a session and a half of just heavy combat with heavy role play in an interactive environment, and then the Azimars. And even like the little fairy dragons we fought before going to Taran, it's just everything is unique and involving, and it's good combat. I like it. But mostly my favorite thing is just what All Farm is like, because it's complete opposite to everything else that we do. And it has got pathos.
And there is a strip club, which makes everything better. That is a piece of advice that I can give to DMs that I didn't say before, is for combat. Like, I think the best way to make combat more exciting for everyone is just describe everything. I think a lot of times in combat for a lot of new DMs or even sometimes experienced DMs, it becomes too much. I slash with my sword. You miss. I slash with my sword again. You miss. Okay, it's your turn. I slash with my sword. I cast fireball. Like there's, like if you just do that, that's why a lot of people are like, oh, combat like sucks. I don't want to do combat in D&D. It's because that's what combat should be. Still role play at that time. So just describe everything. And excruciating details.
As proven with decapitations from a Lili. And the amazing prostate exams.
What happens in season one stays in season one, Matthew.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've got to say, there's a lot of moments that stand out. Obviously, LB being baffled by a magic box, basically, and then literally kill stealing at the end of that fight as well. there have been times where LB's tried to befriend Damien, and it never works. I've got to admit, a very close second is the look on my face when I found out Nunvark wasn't Nunvark.
I mean, he's still the same person. It's just a different name.
I know, but it was like LB wasn't used to that sort of idea, and that's how I tried to play it. LB still liked Vivian, obviously. It just threw him for a loop for a few minutes.
See how it is.
That was, of course, after he'd just come off the stage having done a karaoke off with Cal,
he could out sing.
And lost, yes, but also led to my favourite part in the whole of Wolf Farm, where LB went on stage and did a drag routine. Caitlin's taken a head. I can. I've been watching a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race at that point, so.
I'm aware.
Probably one of my favorite DMs I've ever gotten in my life. Hey, Chad, I want to make my way on stage. All right, we can work with that.
The fact is that it also probably led to, at this point, Has the end of the FMR fight gone up yet, Chad?
By the time this episode goes out, it will have been up.
Okay, cool. I can say it then. That's the reason why LB in that fight does not have half the stuff he should have on him, because he's left it all in the dressing room at the club. He's literally in a dress. And I love it. That is why I love Chad at the DM. He was very accommodating to my desire to want to be a drag queen for the only time in my life.
And also, if you listen back to that episode, you can hear Matt be absolutely furious with me as a DM, as I keep telling him all of his plans will not work.
Yeah.
He was not happy. It was pretty fun, though.
I was not a happy dwarf.
No, for me, Ulfarm has been, like, I'm very much a lore hunter, I would describe it. Like, if there's a story, I will find it. Which means a lot of the downtime things, Chad and I have gone back and forth with, like, long paragraphs of what Damian did and what he found out and who he spoke to. Like, I have freaking loads of information that the others haven't touched. And, like, that's brilliant. And then you just go to the complete parallel that is Damian's relationship with Vicious. Because, like, that's some of my favorite roleplay stuff. And, like, my favorite moment is still, like, the bit with Bart that we haven't seen yet. Like, that is, I think that's the most I've gotten into a bit that I have in a while. But it's nice being able to play someone so chaotically different to myself. I'm too socially awkward normally to be a dick. That's how Damian is. He's a dick. And I think, like, once everyone, like, when further episodes come out, people will see kind of I am playing him differently because I was being too nice. Damien's a douchebag. He don't care. He likes Varian. That's kind of it. Honestly, the fact Varian looks up to Damian is so strange to him.
Is Varian not on the instant kill list because he never actually tried to befriend Damian, just let things happen?
Varian's on the don't kill if possible list.
I'll take that as a win.
I always love the fact that we always, at least once an episode in Ulfarm, get a chant from Caitlin and Kerry of Warlock Squad. I still love that.
Warlock Squad.
And I am making t-shirts for that for you to the EGX, for sure.
Also, I demand further memes of Damian terrorizing Bart with Julius.
Can be arranged.
That's just funny.
That can be arranged, I'm sure. Alex, get on it.
I couldn't get over Bart being such a shithead all this time.
Bart will still be a dick to you guys. That'll be out. Because that, I said, episode will come out Friday. Because that'll be it'll be a double bill of Chad Monday and Friday.
That's I cool. can get over that.
If this is next Saturday.
Yes, this will be, yeah. This will be the 24th, I believe. Yes, I think that's right.
Yeah. One last thing, and then we can move on from Ulfarm. The most thing I am excited for in Ulfarm is we have not even completed a season of information yet that you guys are going to get. And the amount of things that I've dropped hints to, and Caitlin's found out some of it, and the amount of things that are going to start happening quite soon. I am actually more excited for my season one finale, which probably isn't for another probably 4 to 5 episodes. That's when shit's gonna kick off. I'm just very excited. Very excited.
I've got to say that I'm very happy with the new character I've brought in after what happened in the finale of that battle, for sure, Chad. Not entirely sure everyone's gonna like him. In fact, I'm guaranteed that most people are gonna hate him. But the fact of the matter is that I'm enjoying playing him, and I'm pretty sure that Chad is enjoying watching everyone else squirm at how cheesy some of it is.
Oh, good old Detective Wyatt.
I like Ulfarm thus far. I like you. I don't care.
About right. To be fair.
Now we all say nice things about Alex's campaign.
Oh, God. Do Caelan first.
Nothing nice. No. I mean, a lot of your campaign has been a surprise to me because we've done a lot of like plotting in the side. Like Eli's whole thing was I got a message being like, I want to do something to completely floor the party, but it would involve Eli. And I'm like, all right, bring it. I love suffering. And then it evolved into I died for a while. And now it's a plot point. Also, the fact that you had my freaking dad turn up and then Picasso yeets you into a volcano. How do you feel about your dad being thrown into a volcano?
All I can ever remember in that episode is you muttered, oh, fucking the most panicky voice ever when he did that.
No, I think, honestly, the Lauren Reed Ally triangle is my favorite. It's like Eli is a soft spot for Ran, hence why Ran got given Gurr, the cuddly toy from the fair. And Picasso's growing on her, but Reed's like, no, this Reed. Eli's like, no, this is my girlfriend now. You cannot have her. Be gone, thought. I will mutiny you.
I love how much you've lent into it as well, because I've got a reputation for not providing a lot of backstory.
Not a lot. Do you want to know what I got?
What?
Because it's not really spoilers. This is the information I got for Reed. I sailed with the Red Brands for passage. I have an aunt. And that's it.
I mean, when I got my notes from Moira, I know more about her shoes than I do about her personality and life story.
Her shoes are her personality.
Yeah, I got Shambles is an acolyte of the twin-tailed fox. He's in jail because he burned something. That's it.
And to be fair, I have expanded on all of that since then.
Expanded on Shambles?
Bit. Not greatly, yes. But yes, I have slightly.
I got Eugene and that was it.
Well, that's fair. But because of that, but I've also been... I tend to not do too badly when it comes to just rolling with the punches, and I can roll anything Alex throws at me. I wasn't expecting to have a wife. I wasn't expecting to have left her 3 days after having met her at the altar. But it all worked really well. And come into the fact of Reed going down to Eli's room on the deck, open the door being very sweaty, and Reed opening
when
fire.
Alex messaged me about that, I was like, yes.
Did you expect Reed to open fire?
Yeah, you tried to shotgun me.
No, Alex, did you expect Reed to open fire at that point?
I mean, I expected you to retaliate, but I didn't expect you to fucking shoot her.
Pulls a shotgun at like close range on a bloody human.
I missed the monk.
You missed because I rolled well.
Yeah, that would have been like critical damage.
Would you have made a death save for that?
No, but at that sort of range, that would have been critical damage, which would have been 32. Yeah. That would have 32 damage.
And I think at that level, I had like 35 health or something.
Oof. Yeah. It's been fun doing that for sure.
Sorry, 34.
Yikes, even more damage.
And Matt, the whole Lauren shit is your fault because you said, I'm sure you can make up backstory. I was like, you know what? Fuck it, I'm making up backstory.
And Powder Keg came from my backstory.
And that's where
that was the best part.
And that's where I learned my lesson.
Yeah, because Matt was like,
never
I say
trust
with
Alex
these.
With anything.
Matt's like, I say with these people. Caitlin's like, these people are people Eli wants to kill. I was like, why not mix the pair? And then we had that.
A lie has a halfling by the throat.
Against a wall, because reasons. You sailed with powder keg, you piece of shit.
Didn't like him, but yes. It was good. That was good fun for sure.
Yes, my favorite part of Alex's campaign just has been, yeah, being able to just play full-on chaos and just go with everything without really caring about the consequences because, yeah, Picasso with being a monk and now being a barbarian as well is just basically a tank and a turtle. So it's just, I just love to run in through things as just blind, just wonderfully happy, chaotic turtle. And also getting to play the part where Picasso was so sad that he didn't want to die. He just wanted to die. It was a lot of fun too.
That hurt because I knew that Eli would come back and I was like.
I think that's my favorite mental image I've ever crafted is when he was floating back down on his back yelling at Reed. When Reed was trying to tell him and Picasso was just like, leave me alone. Fuck you. This is your fault.
Technically speaking, to this day, I can still say this, Eli is the one that wanted to come off the powder keg, not Reed.
I mean, Picasso is a 15-year-old turtle who has... So basically, he's a teenage monk turtle. So, you know, he doesn't have exactly the greatest emotional grasp on anything. And if you've ever had a teenager lose anything, they tend to get real, real pissy and about anything and everything and blame whoever they can.
Tell about England football fans.
topical.
To be fair, one of the best things inadvertently that Picasso ever did was Alex created this amazing battle system for ship combat. Picasso just dives off a fucking boat and attacks him underneath.
And punches the 40-foot-long turtle.
I am also a turtle, so clearly I was going to... That was actually a great moment when Alex is like, I don't think you can talk to it. And I go, I bet you I can.
I was still new to it. Leave me alone.
It was brilliant. It was brilliant watching... Yeah, it was just so awesome because I spent so long. He ran it past me like 5 or 6 times. Does it make sense? Like, that makes sense. And that all makes sense up here. Like that. Perfect. When it comes to it, we'll be ready to go. Picasso, I'm going to punch the fucking thing. Brilliant.
Gary Stern.
Yeah, what's been the best things from Rand's point of view?
Watching everyone's face when we all learned that Reed was a bastard and left Lauren. He didn't even tell her. He just left her a note. If I remember
Ran
rightly.
Nick coming up with Captain Bastard.
No, I don't think that was Ran.
I'm pretty sure that was Ran.
I think Bastard. Somebody called Bastard Bro was Picasso, Captain Bastard was Ran.
Yeah,
and Captain You Absolute Bastard was a lie.
Yeah, and You Absolute Bastard was me.
To be fair, you guys just rolled that so well. And I rolled so badly on the day for it as well. I really didn't do well that day. It was really good fun. Ran has been amazing. The journey that Ran's been on, the doctorate and nurse guru at one point was amazing. I adored all of that.
I think my favorite thing about Ran is going back to the Ran and Picasso session. When you let them take the helm completely and no one else's input interrupts their thought pattern, it's just complete and utter chaos. Like, I made the main notes of what I wanted to happen, but every little in-between bit was made up on the fly because I knew, like, they weren't going to stick to any kind of plot in between. So, like, I put the cage in, I assume that was the most obvious outcome. But because of the way they think, I was half expecting them to try to sneak into the back. So just make it up as you go for Ran and Picasso. And I can't wait to see what they do with later Ran and Picasso episodes.
Out of context, special episode, just lots of screaming into microphones.
It was great. Absolutely great.
That's every episode, just screaming into microphones.
Have you ever heard the magical ballad of Dragon Ball Z?
I've never watched Dragon Ball Z.
It is the pinnacle to which all voice actors are scared of.
Is it Dragon Ball Z or is it Naruto where they basically just stare at each other for like 5 episodes and then the battle ends in 30 seconds?
Dragon Ball Z.
Okay.
That could also be Naruto to my recollection.
Yeah. Remember that one episode where I didn't watch enough of Naruto, so I had no idea what was going on. But you had red hair guy and you had Naruto where they literally stared at each other and went over backstory for like 4 episodes and then it ended in like 15 seconds with a headbutt.
I remember that one. We're just like, wait, we've wasted like 4 evenings for this.
I've wasted my life.
Well, that's an hour and 45 minutes I'm never going to get back for a headbutt.
I mean, I haven't really watched many episodes of either, but I think there's more screaming in Dragon Ball Z.
Yes.
I just remember the baton race where he stuck the baton on his ass.
That was a special one in Naruto, I think.
Yeah,
or were you watching weird porn on the internet?
I think we've gotten off topic.
Really? Think?
Let me come over there.
Sorry, this is why I shouldn't be allowed to talk.
Kay, so far since you're still talking, Kay, why have you got any words of praise for Caitlin's campaign?
Mm. Well, for a start, they put up with me hassling them pretty much every
other
day.
I love the hassling. The hassling is great.
I mean, sorry, I'm not very good at words today. Someone else can go first.
Thank you for putting up with Shambles.
I don't have much of a choice in the matter.
Well, you could have killed Shambles 5 times over by this point. Let's face it, you are evil. The fact that Shambles has gone from literally just burning some grass in a graveyard by accident to burning down the church, the orphanage, the pub, and the well in the town is amazing. And the fact
that's
that
real irony. How did you do that?
Shambles is special.
That he is.
Indeed. To be fair, the waste has been highlighted by everybody else. It's such a psychological trip. Literally, I love it. I love it. It's so different from all the campaigns are too different from each other. But that one is something which the whole time you cannot take your ears off of what is being said for a moment, because if you do, you're going to miss something huge, because you never know when Caitlin is going to throw something at you, which is crucial, or an NPC which ends up getting killed before they can start anything. Sorry, Josh.
Rip, Josh.
Josh. I just love how Josh has the most basic name.
Josh is so basic. He's a basic bitch.
Super powerful dude, Josh.
It's funny because my two favorite lads, San and Varian, are probably, like, mentally speaking, my weakest characters. So it's fun getting to watch San be traumatized. But anything Caitlin throws at him. And I think it's using the information that I gave you in ways that I never would have, like, second guessed. Like, San, I mean, obviously, in the episode with the doors, San never saw what happened in his scene for himself. It just kind of shed a whole new light on everything.
Also, shed a whole new light on what a bastard your father-in-law is.
Yes, yes, he is. Also, shout out to Chad for doing that for Varian's information as well, just kind of using it against me in ways I wouldn't have guessed.
Hey.
I look forward to that with Detective Wyatt as well, for sure. For sure.
I enjoyed that aspect with Alex's reaction to what I did with Dakota's flashback.
I did not see that coming. I mean,
I
knew
this thing being like, yeah, I murdered my mother and brother, and I'm like, all right, let's go.
And then it turns out it wasn't Dakota, because the way I've described my patron to you, it's very possible. It's not an out there scenario at all. So I did not see that coming. But at the same time, it just works perfectly.
And I'm not sure, but I think I pissed Alex off in real life during that because Shamble thought I'd go dancing with someone in the flashback.
No. Everyone stopped dancing when, you know, a murder happened.
Shambles kept dancing.
The woman on the other side was like, what the fuck, trying to watch it. Shambles just like spins her in the air.
Literally doing the scene from Dirty Dancing at that point. Shambles is so innocent. Didn't even see the murder.
I think going back to it, I think the psychological part is arguably my favorite because while we tend to, most of the what we've done tends to stick to physical harm on the characters, we don't really branch a lot into the mental harm of the characters, I've found. I mean, we have, but not to the level you have. And the level you have
this, I raise you trauma.
It's been very extreme. And also Dakota is definitely my favorite. And the fact that I play Dakota and I'm like, moral, what's that? I don't like these people. They can just die anyway. And the sibling, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, when like, obviously, you know, they're not related, but you'd all but consider them like a brother. That, yeah. Like Dakota and Charlemagne's relationship in that terms. I love their back and forth and what they have between them. And I can't wait to expand on that more.
Neither can I.
I'm excited for that.
Be afraid, Alex. Be very and afraid.
I'm also excited for another level in Sorceress. I want that. So I will wait for that.
Chad?
I think I already talked about, you're clearly a couple of my favorite moments, clearly the Charlemagne reveal from being Varys the Great. But for my other two, probably my favorite two moments, and they're both on very opposite ends of the spectrum, they're both roleplay related. It's one, when way back when we had the whole courtroom scene, and I decided to play Oberyn as just a humble lawyer, man, and just trying to get us out of this little bit of a bind. And it was just a ridiculous thing and a lot of darkness that we have here in Caitlin's campaign, Escape the Waste. And then also for the complete opposite end of the spectrum is the battle with Khal'Saru and just taking Oberyn to a full, just basically Hulk level of rage where there was no rhyme or reason to anything. There was only death to Khal'Saru, regardless of his own well-being.
When you pulled out his eye, when I'd already like gotten you lot to choose what would happen to you and you'd drawn the eye, I was like, huh.
Eye for an eye.
The eye, Renee.
And now it's just watching you in a weird jar.
Extremely creepy. That's getting on for nearly 2 hours of discussion, guys. That's not too shabby. We've had a lot to talk about, haven't we? And it's something we haven't touched on, to be fair.
I mean, if you love, like, if you enjoy playing with people and you are willing to try something new, D&D is remarkably intuitive.
Mm.
It's Clicky Clacky Math Rocks featuring suffering and trauma.
This is the only time you ever enjoy trauma.
Only time, yeah.
Oh boy, Tuesday, what trauma is coming for me next?
It is.
Oh boy, it's Tuesday.
traumatic Tuesdays.
Alex,
is it Tuesday yet?
Alex did mention this to me the other day. Is it, and I'm going to quote you, Alex, here. Is it just me, or does playing D&D actually, has it made lockdown go faster? Yeah, it has, for sure. It made it so much better because it's always been something to look forward to. Pain and suffering, we look forward to. That's a strange concept, but it's true. It's true. And as you go listening, you've probably heard there are five different, very, very different campaigns with five very different DMs, all with their own point of view, be it my softly approach, as it were.
Basic pitch. Season one is basic bitch.
I'll take that. I'll take that. I don't care. You've got that Chad and Caitlin's level of insanity and psychotics for sure. Alex is well, his very, very good pirate campaign. I can't give you enough props for that. Someone who once said D&D is boring, the idea of that. He's so changed his mind now. So changed his mind. And of course, Kerry's campaign, which I have so much love for. There's so much depth in. I don't think we've even touched the surface of what is like going on with the military and all that stuff as well. But I look forward to exploring what happened with Corey's group, for example. Looking forward to that. Hell!
It happened yet.
Wow!
Stay away from my son.
It's the ocean like... is the ocean has literally touched more plot than we have.
But it's stuff like that, which stuff we were not ready for, and or not expecting anyway, for sure. Yeah, Kerry, maybe the newest DM of five of us, but in my opinion, better than me.
Going a bit far, isn't it?
That's my personal opinion. I'm entitled to that.
We're all very good DMs, except the compliments, live your lives.
Okay, right. So, to wrap up this show, we shall give our, you know, an outro, as it were. We will start with Chad.
Hello, I've been Chad. I've been here to talk about Dungeons & Dragons today. It was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me for a second time here on Game Junkies. If you want to follow me on Twitter, follow me at Chad_mind or at you from top rope. And also listen to me on Visionaries Global Media. Media. I don't know why.
Media.
Yeah. Switched into a weird accent right there. I'm on a whole bunch of those podcasts. So check me out on Visionaries Global Media. Yeah.
Absolutely awesome. Caitlin?
Hi, I'm Caitlin. I'm not part of Visionaries Global Media. I'm just that weird person that turns up every so often. I write about video games and mental health and also put my campaign to tabletop games on themindgame.org or at Our Mind Games. Or if you just want to look at my cats, at Caitlin RC. Because honestly, same.
Lark and Loki are cute. They really,
my
really
babies.
Yeah, they are amazing. And of course, myself, Alex and Kerry. You can find Alex
at Spiderbread UK. You can find our main show at Game Junkies Pod. And you can also find the Dungeons & Dragons content at Dungeon Junkies.
Indeed you can. And for which Kerry, of course, runs the Dungeon Junkies art Instagram for us.
Yeah, I get to supervise that. It's literally just Dungeon Junkies on Instagram.
Indeed. And you're still Sure Beans on Twitter, I believe. Which is...
Yes, don't say nice things to me. It embarrasses me.
Oh, you're
only send thing. Memes.
Send memes. Always send memes. They're good. And find me at matt.uk. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Thank you to Caitlin and Chad for knowing yourselves and coming on the show. on behalf of us all here at Game Junkies, I'm Matt.
I'm Alex.
I'm Kerry, I think.
And we're back in 2 weeks, so we're out of here.
This podcast is a Matt Attack production for Visionaries Global Media.